What's up, Dialed fam? Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Strength Training for Cyclists podcast by Dialed Health. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and operator of Dialed Health, and this is probably the best I've felt coming into an episode. I have a fresh sugar-free Red Bull next to me. I'm getting caffeinated up. I just feel relaxed. We did some nice prep for this episode. We have some really cool topics that I've been asked a lot about recently. And that first topic is gonna be about massage guns versus foam rollers. I'm gonna give you a general overview about kind of what they do, but really more so my experience. And I'll get into the details of why, but basically it's because there's such a lack of research really done in these areas. And even foam rolling to begin with is also kind of a fuzzy area when you quote unquote talk about science. And so we'll be talking a lot about my experience because I've been using one for the last 3 to 4 months. And then after that, we're going to go into carb loading, which is a really cool thing that I looked into researching for this episode. Obviously, I knew a handful of things about it, but kind of find out some new things that I'm really excited to share with you. Then we're going to talk about Dialed Health Shred week 3. We've been kind of going week by week. And this week, I'm going to talk about my weight loss and what it's kind of looked like through plateaus and drops and gains and all that kind of stuff. And also the biggest thing I've been struggling with this shred. After that, we're going to talk about dirt jumping, why I don't do it anymore. And then we're going to go into a business and a baby update. Sorry, I laugh about the dirt jumping thing because I still hit jumps, but I don't really sit at the bike park and dirt jump or dig jumps like that anymore. So that's why I was laughing there. But we're going to go into the business conversation and then a little baby update, because last time we talked, I would have literally bet my car, honestly, on the fact that I would have had my 2 twins by now. But just so you know, everyone's super healthy. It's looking really good. And I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on with that because it's coming quick, man. It's happened and it's got to, or I'm going to lose my mind. Now, I have a big request and I've been thinking about it. This is what it's in regards to. So I've been thinking about trying to get on more podcasts to really not only promote my own podcast, but to really just grow the Dialed fam. It's something I've become more excited to do, really, and not just for you guys, but just to try and grow the podcast in general. So I have a question number one is, what podcast do you think I should try and get on? Could you please shoot me an email with that, or you could shoot me a DM and just say, yo, you should be on this podcast, because you don't have to have a connection, but I can start pounding on all the doors and at least going from there. Secondly, could you please leave me a podcast review on the podcast app in Apple, if you're listening on Apple, or if you're on any platform where you can leave a review, a 5-star review, plus just something positive about the podcast would be great. And here's why I really would appreciate that specifically. When you go to other people's podcasts, you can't really see how many listens or downloads they're getting, but you can see the reviews. And that really correlates to a strong audience. And so me having more reviews, especially positive reviews, really will show those people that if they even want to come on my show or vice versa, that there's some value there. And so it's going to help out a lot. And again, I can't do it for myself. So if you could please go leave the reviews on whatever podcast platform you're listening to, that would be huge. Okay, you guys, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this intro, by the way. I'm just trying to be a little bit more relaxed, not focus too much on perfect talking, perfect literature, spectacular vernacular. And yeah, hopefully it's a little bit more of a nice sound for you guys. It messes with my OCD a little bit, I'll be honest. This is a quick rant before we actually jump into the episode. I want it to be dialed. You know I want it to be dialed. That's why it's Dialed Health. I named Dialed Health because what do you just want to be in regards to your health, your riding, your fitness, everything? You just want to be dialed. You want your nutrition to be dialed. You want your recovery to be dialed. It is the best word to describe how I want to be. And the way I speak on this podcast is no different. So anyways, let's dive into this thing. We're going to start out with the massage guns. I posted on my Instagram earlier this week a quick clip in my story of me using a massage gun. I have a Theragun Elite, and it's probably very familiar looking because Therabody is one of the biggest companies that's making all these massage guns. And before I got one, I really, really wanted to use one consistently because I had friends with them and not really implemented one. And they're just so interesting looking. My first thought was looking at it was like, how easy would it be to use that instead of foam rolling? It just looks relaxing. You just sit on the couch and use it, which you can. And before we go into the details about what I think of that versus foam rolling, or just comparing the two, the pluses and the minuses, let's just go into the research about these things a little bit. So what's crazy about massage guns is they have been used for a while. In fact, my chiropractor, like a decade ago, when I was going in at that time, would use what he called the rapid release technology. He just called it the RRT. And so it was basically the same thing. He had sort of a different attachment. It was a lot stiffer, and he would just run it basically up and down my spine, like right on the outside, the erector spinae. So there's two muscles, and it kind of just helped everything move a little bit. But I remember it feeling so good. So when I saw these massage guns first a few years back, that was the first thing I thought of. And so when we're talking about, so that was kind of a side note. They've been around for a while, but some genius is just making them affordable for everyone. And so really the research in regards to massage guns, if you start looking it up, it's just gonna relate everything to massage, compare it to foam rolling. And even in those realms, it's very vague. And here's one thing that's always been the biggest question I've had. Some people do not credit foam rolling as effective because there's not this scientific backing for it. There's not enough data and studies that really confirm that it is without a doubt something that works, I guess, quote unquote works. But I don't see people doing that with massage. And it's literally like, I'm not going to say it's the same thing, because yes, you have a trained professional who understands anatomy. Your body is completely passive, which just means you're relaxed. I mean, you're not going to beat that. And especially when you get someone that's really good, a sports massage therapist, and they're able to just move your joints through different ranges of motion and use your own body to add to the release. Like, that stuff is legit. You cannot beat that. But then when you think about foam rolling, you're like, okay, I'm not completely passive. You know, it does take some effort, some energy, but I can, you know, relax my leg while I'm foam rolling my quad. And, you know, I got to keep my core tight. I have to keep my shoulders engaged, and they're probably going to burn a little bit. But I mean, it's releasing quads like I want to. So I don't get that. And also, I just have to point out, if you asked me if the sky was blue, I would literally just look up and say, yeah, the sky is blue. I do not need science to tell me that. So that's what annoys me so much about people who are so, like, does science have its place? Oh my gosh, of course. Of course. But, you know, it's the real, all my boundaries around my training are really based off of science. But there's all these little mind, like details to training that people just have this line in the sand. We're like, oh, if it's not completely backed, then it's not worth your time and blah, blah, blah. But oh my gosh, like if you just foam roll and feel it, I don't know how you can't think that that helps. And there is a ton of data behind perceived just effort or exertion, or just how you perceive something in regards to how comfortable it is or painful it is, having a real effect on your training, and that's real. So anyways, when you look into the evidence, don't expect to find something that's like, use a massage gun at this time for this amount, whatever, before a ride, after a ride. You're just not going to find those kind of specifics. It's not going to guarantee that it works. But the best thing to do is to really just try it out for yourself. And that's kind of what I have done. So initially, when I got this massage gun, my first thought was, like I said before, oh my gosh, this is just going to replace foam rolling. It's so much easier. I can be totally lazy. Or you know how it is. If you do foam roll a lot, it works, but it does take effort. And sometimes when you're just totally smoked after a ride, no matter how achy your legs could be, or your body or your neck or whatever, the extra effort and energy it takes to get that foam rolling done and that release you want, sometimes it's just not worth it. Excuse me, because I'm gonna burp. Oh yeah, that's the cost of a Red Bull right there. So when I first started using the massage gun, I honestly expected it to just feel like foam rolling. I thought the effects would almost mirror it, and that was so not the case, because what you'll notice when you do use a massage gun is that, for one, you can be a lot more lazy. You can sit down, you can lay down. It's just easier to do, but you have this crazy, the vibration or percussion, whatever you want to call it. I know there's a technical difference. Don't get on me for that, because you'll find that if you start researching it. But either way, you have this almost tingly, relaxed sensation that you get that you really don't from a foam roller, unless you're on a vibrating foam roller. So that was really interesting, and it just felt good. Like I first used it in my studio. I was walking around, and I had some of the lateral muscles on the outside of my right leg, like IT band kind of stuff, was a little stiff that day. So I used it and just felt so relaxed. So it does most definitely calm down muscles in regards to something that's tensing up. Like, you all know that feeling when you have a muscle that's just seizing up. Usually this is one of those chronic areas for you where you can just feel it kind of tightening. And it's like, unless you stop everything you're doing and address it, you know you're just going down a road of like a sore or whatever for the next couple days. So with that situation, it definitely does help just relax the muscle. It just relieve it and seriously take some stress off. And you get that tingly feeling that just feels very good. And post-ride, when I started using it, I noticed that with really achy muscles, it feels great. And this is different from a muscle being sore, because if you have real soreness in a muscle, you're gonna have to probably slow down how fast the percussion is. Then, you know, because you can do like, on my Theragun, it's 1750 is the lowest setting. I think that's beats per minute. And then you have up to 2,400. And I usually go full blast. I'll usually use a harder attachment. And there's even some like arrow shaped ones that are really intense, and you can get in deep, but when you are sore, slow it down, put on a super soft attachment. It's really going to help bring blood flow to the area. But if you don't do that, it's going to be just flat out painful. Kind of like foam rolling. You know, if you foam roll a lot, the more sore you are with foam rolling, the more chill you have to be, the softer a roller you want to use. It's very much the same thing applies there. But when you do have those really achy, tired legs, hitting them with the massage gun is the best. It is the best, because even though a foam roller can give you a similar feeling, like help just relax the muscles, get that achiness out, it's still promoting blood flow and moving things around. When you're tired after a ride, like, you don't want to do that work. So I have this big pillow called a love sack. It's incredible. And so I'm laying flat on my back on this huge love sack, and I'm just blasting my quads with it. I can, you know, bend my knee and get my calves and my hamstrings, and I'm just vegging out, probably, you know, shoving Oreos down my face. And no, not really. I'm probably drinking Kyoku, to be honest, but I'm, you know, which is a proper recovery drink that a real athlete would use, okay? I'm a real athlete over here, so it feels great. So that is a very much a bonus to the massage gun, and that's why I'd recommend it for cyclists a ton, and especially like on my traps. I've been using it on my shoulders, my traps, these areas that when you're just kind of sitting on the couch and you could use that relief, it's there, and it's a lot easier than standing up, grabbing a lacrosse ball, going to the wall. And again, stuff you can still do, but it's just not as convenient. Now, the one downside to these massage guns is that they're freaking loud. Not all of them are as loud. Like, not all of them are super loud. Some claim to be as quiet as a toothbrush. The one I have is not super quiet, in my opinion. But also, when it's by your ear and you're getting your traps, it can be loud. But I'll tell you, I don't have a huge house. My house is like, I think it's 1600 square feet, but it's loud enough that when I'm in my living room, I don't turn it on when my son is sleeping, to give you an idea. He could have his door shut in his room, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know, man. It's not worth the risk. I have done that before, but just to give you an idea, it's right on the fence there. That's how loud it is. And I can't listen to the TV when I'm doing it. You know, I have to watch some like raw bike videos, or maybe I'm just staring at the ceiling or something like that. But you're probably not gonna be able to watch TV. And that is the only thing I can think of that would make these things better. If it was silent, that it would be on. I would have that thing on 24/7 when I'm on the couch, because it's so easy to use. Now, so that is like all the pluses. The minuses being the noise, and also, it just, what I've noticed, even though it can help calm down muscles that feel like they're kind of seizing up, and this is just my own experience here, it just doesn't get as deep as a foam roller or a lacrosse ball does. I mean, I deal with muscle tension issues like everyone does, and I'm really pushing my body, you know, 6 days a week. So when I feel like I need a muscle to seriously lengthen, I need real pressure, I cannot get that with the massage gun. And that's, you know, I'll start with a foam roller usually, but I have so many other self-myofascial release tools that I use. So a lacrosse ball, I have the brand Trigger Point makes this thing called the quad baller that is incredible. Like that is one of my favorite tools. I should probably talk about it more to be honest. They even have one that's shaped the same way. You'll see it has like roller skate wheels on the outside and it's basically completely firm, but the way you can get your calves and your quads with it, oh my gosh, even your lats or your hamstrings is incredible. And they make one that goes in the freezer so you can get like it's kind of like an ice massage. So check out the quad baller on triggerpointtherapy.com. Love their brand. Their stuff's amazing. But I also have a SoRite, which is a friend's company, actually. I used to work with the guy. You've probably seen that like on Joe Rogan, and it's all the rage. They're doing an incredible job. Side note, by the way, they reached out, and I think they're going to send me some CBD. They're starting a new branch to SoRite, and I think it's going to be called So Good or something like that. So anyways, just a heads up, I hopefully will have like a CBD review because I've been really wanting to try that. But back to the foam rolling. So what I've noticed is that you just can't get as deep on the massage guns, and it's really nice to have different options of tools when you do have a normal foam roller because like at the end of the day, although the convenience is there for the massage gun, if I had to pick between that and a foam roller or a foam roller and all my other tools I have, I would definitely pick the foam roller and all my other tools because I can almost emulate the feeling I get from a massage gun with really light static stretching. If I just hold like a neck stretch for 60 to 90 seconds, very light. When I relax, my muscle almost feels like the massage gun does. Now, of course, combining all of these things is the ultimate scenario. I think a lot of you are in that position. You know, save the money on that ceramic pulley for your derailleur and buy a freaking massage gun. Seriously, that's going to make you faster than the free speed you're going to get from that ceramic wheel. I promise you. So this is like a whole other topic. We really need to talk about this. Like Trainer Road has done an amazing job talking. They've had these posts called it's like the cost of getting faster, and it shows all these bike parts, and it basically proves that their subscription is the most affordable way to do it, or like what 10 watts does opposed to all these weight savings and yada yada yada. So it's very true. You know, I have always been more focused on my body and my body's performance and the responsibility I have to maximize that opposed to parts and bikes and this and that. And I've always ridden really great bikes, so that is a thing there. But I've also gone periods where I don't have top of the line bikes. Even my road bike at the moment is an expert level build, which it's an incredible bike, but it's like 19 and a half pounds or something like that. It's not a super light road bike. And so anyways, what I would say is focus on your body, spend the money on these types of tools and just implement them, and don't expect them to all be the same, and that just don't expect one tool to be the end all be all and replace everything, because that's just not going to happen. And that's kind of how I came into the massage gun, and I don't want to say I was bummed for that to not be true, but that's reality. I mean, all these things exist for a reason, and I would just use as many as you can and really understand and kind of like get that feedback of when you need this versus that. We have a short, fun, quick question from @old_Gloshny. He says, why don't you dirt jump anymore? And don't say it's because it's not safe. I wouldn't say that. I feel like everything I do is dangerous to an extent. In quick side note, I stopped downhill racing at one point and had started like skateboarding and doing random stuff. But it was after probably 6 years of getting one legit injury per year, everything from a broken collarbone to broken arm to concussions to an ACL surgery, and it just didn't stop. And I remember honestly thinking when I stopped, it would be nice to not be injured anymore. And I kid you not, within months I destroyed my finger doing a kickflip on a skateboard. It was the most lame thing ever, but I basically fell forward, jammed my finger so hard that I compacted the bone between the knuckles, and they had to, it was completely, not completely sideways, it was like 45 degrees from the middle knuckle. I thought I had dislocated it, so I grabbed it and pulled it straight just to watch it slowly pull back out of position, because thankfully the tendons and ligaments were all intact. They had to take bone out of my wrist and surgery and fill it back in. It was honestly, I have more arthritis in my right ring finger from that than any other joint or thing in my body. It is so jacked. In fact, if you looked at my knuckle on my ring finger, it's, I don't know, maybe a third wider than my other hand. I mean, it's bigger than my middle finger knuckle by a lot. It's wild looking. I could never get a normal ring on this finger. So anyways, that is something I think about regularly, because when it comes to most fun things, in my opinion, there's some danger involved. And honestly, I'm just not going to let that stop me anymore. I will say I don't take as many risks on the bike as I used to, because for one, I don't have really as much to prove to myself or other people, whatever. But also, I don't know. I just don't even have the desire to really get that sketchy. And it's tough because there's times where I see things, I'm like, I know I could do that. But man, it's really not, like, the risk is not worth the reward on that one. I think of that with those Fest series jumps all the time. I'm like, I know I'm capable of hitting something like that, but would I ever do it if I was there? I don't think so. Like, because when it goes bad on those, it goes real bad. But then again, they're not, I don't know. I've never hit a 70-foot jump. I've hit 45-foot jumps, but that's it. So I'm going on a real tangent here. Basically, I'm saying I would never let something stop me because it just flat out wasn't safe. There's got to be kind of more of a reason to it. And really with dirt jumping, I stopped because of trail bikes. I started riding trail, and it was about the time I started getting out of downhill racing. So I remember at the time I had a dirt jumper and I had a downhill bike. And then when trail bikes kind of came out and I wasn't racing downhill anymore, I sold both to get a trail bike. And, you know, dirt jumping a trail bike isn't that cool. I mean, especially if you're experienced dirt jumping hardtails and you're hitting real super steep quality dirt jumps, it's not that fun on a trail bike, in my opinion. Like, you don't want to just be out there all day. You can't really make an event of it. It's like maybe something you kind of sneak in on a ride if they're there, but you don't go out of your way to do it. So that was the biggest reason. And then really from there, I just fell in love with trail riding so much. And then, oh, here comes another burp. Wow, it's probably going to be happening all episode. So there, I just got more into road riding to support enduro racing, and then started the business and yada yada. And pretty soon, I'm at this point now where I like really just want to hammer out miles. And when I ride, I want all of my ride time to be riding. You know, I even don't want to shuttle that much, to be honest. Like, even waiting in line for a Lyft run, if there is a line, I'm like, oh man, I'd rather be on my bike pedaling and just riding the whole time, because I love the whole ride now. I love everything, literally start to finish. I love riding up. I love riding flat. I love riding down. It's all so fun to me now. And because I don't get an insane amount of time to ride, I just want to get every second on the bike as I can. So that's kind of why I don't dirt jump either, because, you know, dirt jumping is kind of like hanging out also, which doesn't make it bad. It's just not a great fit for me right now. And I really do say though, like, I hope my kids get into riding so that I can do that again. Like, I do just want to go chill out on my bike, hit a couple dirt jumps, chill, or go out on my mountain bike and not just try and hammer and just go slow and chill. And literally I just want to go out in the woods and sit on my seat, look around and be totally okay with it. And I think that's something I'd be able to do with my kids. Obviously we're riding slow, I'm helping them. It's not really about me, but it's just being out there. You know, I just love being out there. And so hopefully the kids bring that back, but we'll see. So maybe there will be more dirt jumping in my future. But yeah, it's pretty much because of those reasons right there. So that's it. I hope that is satisfactory for you. If you guys are out dirt jumping right now, props. I still watch it sometimes and I'm like, man, I miss that feeling. Cause there is nothing like, well, I had a pretty good road ride this weekend. I'm not going to lie. Good weather on a road ride. You feel like you're almost, like, when the temp is perfect and you're just smashing down a hill or whatever, you almost feel like you're riding through water. It's the weirdest feeling. It's just perfect. So there's good feelings on the bike elsewhere, but when you perfectly just downside a landing, or you're kind of nosed into it, or you throw a whip, nose in, get a perfect pump, and then you hit a full, let's just say a 6-pack or 8-pack of dirt jumps, and you just nail it, it's a really good feeling. I mean, it's wild. It's like a roller coaster. So now I miss it. All right, thanks a lot for that. This question is from a longtime in-person client, Suzanne Swartz. Actually, one of the last people I trained in person up until recently, and she was asking about carbo loading. Carb loading. She said pre-ride meals from a few days out, right up until the ride. And so the first thing that came to mind in regards to carb loading was that, let's be honest here. Most people carb load every single day. If you're not going to bed like a little hungry, and unless you're on keto or something, you're probably good. I'm going to be 100% honest with that. Like, this would apply to someone who is very low body fat or in a deficit, or someone that really does track their food and understand the difference between maintenance, surplus, and deficit. Because if you're not really in a deficit and you're having some beers and you're not really paying attention to what you're eating, or even if you're quote unquote trying, but you're, let's just say, slowly gaining fat or something like that, trust me, you are loaded. Your glycogen stores are most likely full unless you're on a crazy low carb diet. So I don't say that to be like a dick or anything. I don't say that to be a jerk. I really don't. But it's the reality. You don't need to have, you know, an extra pint of ice cream or whatever it is just so you're quote unquote fueled for your next day's ride. So keep that in mind. But here's what I'll say. So if you are in the exception of, and you do want to prep for an event, you've been very focused on your training, you are falling in that category I mentioned, carb loading really is for that person who is going to do an event that's lasting longer than most likely 90 minutes. Now, if you're racing multiple races that are less than 90 minutes, this still applies to you. Like if you're doing crit racing and you have, let's just say, 2 45-minute crits or 2 40-minute crits or even 30-minute, but they're kind of spaced out throughout the day, I think it's a good idea to consider carb loading. And I will say, even for the people who may not need to go the extra mile with carb loading, just make sure you're not in a deficit coming into an event. We've been talking about this a little bit with the Dialed Health Shred, and I would never try and lose fat the same week that I would try and perform at my highest level. There are just too many competing variables there, competing goals that don't really support each other. So just make sure that that's the case, that you are really not coming in trying to lose fat all week and then you're just going to load up the night before, because that's probably not ideal. What you really would like to do is start carb loading 2 to 3 days out. And that's mostly because you're not going to fill all the glycogen stores in your muscles from one meal. And so some of this information I'm about to say comes from runnersworld.com, actually. It was one of the best articles I found on it, just to clearly kind of state what you need to do. And what they also mention when you start carb loading 2 to 3 days out is that you want to decrease your training volume so you don't deplete those stores. But this is also in line with a taper you would probably do for an event. So for, you know, a lot of people on, let's just say, like a trainer road program or whatever cycling program, they're going to start tapering 2 weeks out to an event, you know, maybe even longer, but 1 week out to an event. Usually what I have people do is make sure that a week out from the event, they're not doing any crazy intensity, maybe just some short spiky intervals, like 10 seconds just to stay super activated. And then I really encourage everyone to do a strength workout like 4 days out or so from an event, but just keep the load super light, focus on speed, activation, and get a good stretch. It's all about just staying activated and keeping your body primed, not actually fatiguing anything or trying to get some like last minute gains, because that's out the window at that point. So as you do that taper naturally, you start bringing up your carbs a couple days out from your event. It works really well. So this is an article by Ryan from Runner's World, and he has a recommendation for the amount of carbs you should eat. And it's kind of an interesting one. I'll just read what he wrote. He said, Ryan recommends eating about 4 grams of carbs for every pound of body weight. For example, a 150-pound runner should consume 600 grams or 2,400 calories of carbs per day. Okay. As someone who's currently having... my carbs are set at like 270 right now. So to think about eating 600 grams of carbs a day is gnarly. But then again, on a big ride day, I would. So if you, oh man, that's just a lot. I think it's interesting to keep in mind 4 grams of carbs per pound of body weight. What I would honestly do if I was in the position I'm in now, which is I'm tracking my food, I'm in a slight deficit, I would get out of my 500 calorie deficit and mostly just make sure I add carbs. So if I, okay, let me start over. I would come up to maintenance with my macros set as they are now, and then I would add a couple hundred calories of carbs, AKA we're talking, you know, less than 100 grams, maybe 100 grams of carbs. So add a maintenance plus 100 grams of carbs a few days out. Because I'm going to be honest, if I did more than that, if I just took on, you know, 600 grams of carbs on a day that I'm not super active, I'm not going to feel good. I'm just not. I'm gonna swell up. I'm going to probably just feel bloated and not great. And to be honest, like, that's the last thing you want to feel coming into a race. You want to feel, you know, light and tight. But I think that could be a little overkill. But then again, if you back it up with science, he's probably onto something. There's always more context to be needed for recommendations like that. It's hard to do for everybody. But what they did say in regards to the carb loading was kind of map out the entire it's like 6 weeks before up until the event of how to time them. So I'm just going to read the article from Runner's World verbatim because it's really cool how they kind of did this. So here's what to do before race day to ensure your tank is full. 6 weeks before, practice carb loading. 2 or 3 days prior to your longest run, start eating more carbs, less fat, and protein. You'll get a sense of what foods agree and disagree with your stomach. Very smart. Practice race day across the board. That is super encouraged. 1 week before, make a plan. A plan is especially important if you're traveling to a race, Ryan says. Pack plenty of snacks such as energy bars, pretzels, crackers, and check menus online and make restaurant reservations. That is a great piece of advice. So if you are traveling to a race, get a little lay of the land and see what your options are for food. You know, most likely you're going to want to head straight to a grocery store, kind of stock up on not only things you need for race day, but even things that you need the day before, certain snacks, you know, and don't forget about those foods you eat throughout your day. You know, for me, it's like having things like carrots and apples. Those are really important for me. I eat them every single day. And sometimes when I've traveled, I forget that. And you end up going meal to meal without snacks in between. You start feeling a little different. So think about the real food you eat throughout the day and make sure you stock up on that. And then when you go out to your big meals, just make sure that you don't end up having to eat, you know, Indian food the night before your race when you haven't eaten it in a year and you spend half the race in the porta potty. You don't want none of that. So keep that in mind. That's just a very practical, smart tip. So check and see what restaurants are available. Where can you get your groceries? Have a plan of action for that. 2 to 3 days before, switch to carbs. Now, through your race, 85 to 95% of your diet should be carbs. You should also eat after taper runs. This is when muscles are primed to store glycogen. So you have your taper, in this case, rides. And so you're making sure that you're fully restocking on carbs. Now, 85 to 95% of your diet, that's a little high for me. I'll be honest. Usually I would say around 70% if you are, tapering for the race, and then maybe during the race be 85 to 95% carbs. Again, that's just my opinion, and that's what I usually coach a lot of people through, because that is a very high amount of carbs. I mean, to have 85% of your diet be carbs the 3 days prior to your race, I would feel like poopy, okay? But I think the general concept here is to make sure that you are having more carbs than normal. That's all I would say. I would not just jump up into these crazy high numbers. Look at what you're doing now. Compare it to what you would do on a high volume ride or race or whatever, and kind of move the needle in that direction. Now, the night before race, this is great advice. I agree with this 100%. Don't stuff yourself. Dinner should be relatively small, but carb heavy. Eat on the early side so that you have lots of time to digest. You want to wake up race day hungry, not full from the night before. That is, I love that so much. Like I said, you want to feel light and tight. And it kind of brings this article full circle for me, because I get, okay, if you start really carbing up the 2 to 3 days out, and then the night before you don't go too crazy, I could see how you feel a little better. Still, carbs those days prior, a little high to me, but this is a really, really good tip. That's one thing during the shred that I've noticed now. Even when I do wake up hungry, I do wake up depleted. It's crazy because when I take in carbs, I can feel them, and I feel so good when I go out and ride, as long as I have that quick fuel with me. And so I could imagine that if I followed this up the carbs the day before, woke up with that light, tight feeling, whoo, it's on. I'm going to be using this thing. So race morning. Have breakfast, please. For the love of God, don't try and race fasted. Well, please, I'm begging you. don't even train fasted, I mean, in my opinion. But there's reasons to do it. If you're trying to get more fat adapted, early morning, there's zone 2, yada, yada. There's reasons. But most people eat a little breakfast. Like this, the ride I did this morning was just a savage sweet spot, Trainer Road 2 hour ride. And I just had a bowl of oatmeal. It was like 200 calories, maple syrup, oats, sea salt, a little pumpkin pie spice. It was amazing. But that was enough to at least get me going with some carbs in my system. My stomach wasn't completely empty. I also had some oat milk in my coffee. And then as I started eating on my ride, I just felt good. And then I had the big meal right after. So race morning, have breakfast. 3 hours before the start, eat 150 grams of carbs. Again, I can't just say that for everybody, but have a carb-heavy breakfast like a bagel and yogurt or sports drink and oatmeal. Ryan says, early race, get up at 3 a.m., eat and go back to bed. That is interesting. I'd be very curious, has anyone listening to this ever done that? Have you ever woken up early to get the carbs in and go back to bed? Honestly, in my just thinking about that, because I've never done it, I can't speak from experience, I don't think I would do that. I mean, if I had a race start at 5 a.m., I would just wake up at 4 and immediately eat something very small and go from there. But man, I can imagine if you had a race start that early, it must be a long race. So doing that probably means the intensity is not as high. You could start maybe not, you know, with a little bit of food in your stomach's probably not a big deal. I don't know. Because the disruption of your sleep could be, I mean, imagine just waking up and not going back to bed. And then you missed out on 2 extra hours of sleep just to digest a little bit more carbs. That one's up to you. I don't know if I'm going to be trying that on race day. Maybe in the future if I do something, that's an option. But I'd be curious if you'd done it. So basically that was kind of the whole lead up to a race. I think it's really interesting. Really my favorite recommendations here are when, you know, to practice upping your carbs and see how your body responds. Get a lay of the land when you travel. Understand what restaurants you need and what grocery stores you can hit. And then don't stuff yourself the night before again. Light and tight, people. That's what you're thinking about. So I hope that helps a ton in regards to carb cycling and just kind of gets the wheels turning, because unless you're working with a very specific nutritionist or someone who knows your body well, they're probably not going to be able to recommend the exact amount. And even then, you're going to have to experiment. Seriously, because you could have everything on paper, but there's so many weird outside variables that no one could really predict until you go through the process. So keep that in mind. You have to be open and willing to experiment with these things to really get the perfect formula for you. We're going to talk about what fat loss should feel like. This is week 3 of this conversation because it's week 3 of the Dialed Health Tread. Now, we're going to go into kind of my weight specifically and how it's been fluctuating, because I weigh every single morning and I want you guys to know what I'm experiencing on the scale, and you'll be able to compare it to what's going on with yourself. But before we start that, here's what I want to say about week 3. And especially when you're hitting it hard, like the Dialed Health Shred, this applies. But really in general, when anyone starts a new workout program, starts coming in and training with someone in person, I've witnessed this. Week 3, okay, maybe training in person, it's more like 2 months out. But when you're really focused on a diet, because it never stops, you know that. It's not like you step into workout, step out of a workout. It is 24/7 you are dieting. So this week 3 is separation season. I've talked about this on my Instagram before. I've gotten this concept from Ed Milet, who's one of my favorite motivational business speaker guys. He's incredible. But he talks about separation season, and he compares it really to times where everyone else starts to back off is when you put the pedal down. You push it down, pedal to the metal, foot to the floor. And that was so corny. I don't know why I said it like that. But what I'm saying is, this is when people start to burn out a little bit. People start to back off. The process becomes a little bit more mundane. And it's not maybe as new and as exciting as it was in the first week when you're figuring things out. The second week, you have enough willpower to get you through it. Third week is like, okay, is this really my life now? And I understand that. I'm bringing it up like this because I've been through this process, and I get how you start looking at the month and you're like, holy smokes, you know, I'm a little bit more than halfway through, but come on now. So right now is the time for you to stay focused and not interrupt the process. Remember, you are to do something, to be something you've never been before, you have to do something you've never done before, and you have to push through this week to get to the point where you start establishing real habits, because you're not quite there yet. You are a snap of the fingers away from going back to whatever, and you have to approach it with that kind of caution. And it's not to scare you. It's not to bring fear into the process, but it's the reality of, oh my gosh, it's only been 3 weeks. You know, there's a chance you've been eating a certain way for 20 plus years, even longer, have these habits embedded. And now you're, you know, in week three, and you can't expect for everything to be easy all of a sudden, especially when you're making these drastic changes. So stay focused through this week. I really encourage you to push. And if you're experiencing any form of a plateau, I would just say stay consistent, because things can move. So here's my experience on that. My starting weight was actually 159.4 pounds, and that was December 26th. So like I said, I started early. December 26th, I took my weight because I knew, I was like, I have a feeling this is gonna be the heaviest I'm gonna be all year. It was last year, but I remember last year at this time, I got up to like 163, oh my gosh. And just so you know, all my power numbers, everything is off of 155, which has like been the weight I've really kind of bounced around all throughout the year. Maybe even more like 155 to 157. But every time I've done a shred, I've gotten down to like 154, and then I kind of slowly come back up. And then after holidays, man, 159.4. And then I went on a family vacation to a cabin, eating a ton of junk food. I remember the last meal I ate that had alcohol in it or had just like a complete overkill of calories, it was beautiful. I think I forgot to talk about this. But after just eating a chili Frito pie that my grandma makes, which is literally chili with Fritos and cheese baked in the oven together. And this is like the family, these are family traditions in the Teal household. So I eat that for dinner. I'm eating cookies. I'm eating this. I'm eating that. I'm drinking. I probably had half a bottle of wine, whatever. I know that's not a lot, but to me, that was like a lot. So I drink that. Maybe I was having some whiskey. And then I go to dessert, where I had this spiked eggnog that was dairy-free and homemade by a friend. Brandy, whiskey, rum, super saucy, incredible. And I had that eggnog with a slice of hot, piping hot pecan pie. The pecan pie with the eggnog combo at the end of the holidays. I'm up in a snowy cabin. It was magical. I'm not gonna lie. I remember eating it and being like, this is it. This is it for a while. And I actually haven't had any alcohol since then, which I'll talk about in a second. But that was real overkill. So after that, I came home. And on the last day I was up there, I started my shred essentially. And when I came home and weighed, a couple days had gone by. So it was January 1st. My next weight came in at 158.5. So I dropped about a pound in the few days of just not drinking, eating lighter meals, but I wasn't tracking until this day. So started tracking at 158.5. And here's how the next consecutive days went. It was 158.1, 156.3, 155.2, 155.4, 154.3. And then I bounced back and forth between 155 and 154 for the next 8 to 10 days almost. Yeah, because it was until the 16th. So you could see I had an immediate drop of almost 5 pounds, a little over, more like really around 4 pounds that I then maintained and just kind of held until the 16th. And that was even after I dropped a couple hundred calories on my total calories for the day. And then I added a little protein by 5%, decreased my carbs by 5%, and it was still hovering there. But I did not interrupt the process. I kept it moving. And then all of a sudden on the 16th, my weight dropped to 151.7. Now for me, that is pretty freaking light. When I was 7% body fat, which is the leanest I've ever been, it was after my first shred. I went, yeah, it was like 2 years ago. I got down to 150 and change. And so I know that for me, getting around the 150 zone is super lean. I don't really expect to go lower than 150, but I'd like to get there this time around. But then the next day, 152.3. And then this morning, I woke up 153.7. So you can see I've generally lost weight. It's been great improvement for, I mean, we're talking about less than 3 weeks still, even at a lower body fat percentage. And so, but it's not like this steady drop every single day. There's fluctuations. It goes up and down. It stalls out. So it's funny because, you know, you could just literally be in a plateau, but instead of giving up, just keep pushing and you'll see, most likely you'll see a drop. Typically when I see people hit a plateau and then never push through it, it's because they give up. Honestly, there's very few people I see nail it and stay consistent that don't eventually get to where they want to go. Your body just takes time. It really just takes time. There's so many variables controlling your weight. But this is why I like weighing every single morning throughout this process, is because it does keep you honest and it makes you evaluate. Like this morning when I woke up heavier at 153.7, I knew it's because the weird sugar-free Jell-O and marshmallow thing I ate last night. It was a total experiment. So let's dive into that. I have been experimenting with these low calorie desserts, super low quality also. You know, I don't love eating a ton of aspartame or whatever, but to be honest, you get kind of desperate at times. I'm sure if you're in this process right now, you know what I'm talking about, where you're like, oh my gosh, I just want to eat something, you know? So you end up having this low quality food, which again, would I want to do that all the time? Would I encourage it all the time? No, but this is kind of a short-term effort to get to where you want. So what I went for was sugar-free Jell-O because I'm like, okay, it's got flavor, it's got volume, and it's 40 calories for an entire pack of Jell-O. So I made the Jell-O, strawberry Jell-O. And just so you know, marshmallows are just pure carb pretty much. A little bit of fat. Or no fat and protein. I can't remember. I just remember it's mostly carbs. And for 100 calories, you can have a decent amount of marshmallows. So that's what I had. I put them on top. It was really good. And the first few bites, I was like, wow, this is kind of my jam right now. But I ate the whole thing. And all of a sudden, I started kind of getting a headache. I just started feeling bloated. And I just felt weird. And right away, I was like, man, I need to stay away from that amount of processed food at one portion. I'm just not used to it. It's not healthy, to be honest. And I've heard of people getting headaches from a lot of aspartame. I don't normally have that. I usually go for stevia or monk fruit or something like that. And yeah, of course, I do drink aspartame. I have, you know, random foods like Oreos every now and then. But it was just like a big thing of Jell-O. So I woke up heavy and I can totally relate it to that, and I won't do it again. In fact, I will say I had some sugar-free chocolate pudding with a little bit of marshmallows on it, a small portion. That really did hit the spot. I'm gonna post a picture on my Instagram pretty soon. So what that showed me was sometimes, even though something makes sense, like, oh, this is super low calorie and high volume, is that when you have it, the reality of it isn't like great. For me, I think at that, I would have been way better off having, let's just say, 5 chocolate covered cashews last night. Enjoyable bites. It wouldn't have filled me up as much, but it probably would have made me feel great. I would have enjoyed it. And it was just like real quality food. That's high calorie, but I could have fit it into my macros. And I think that would have been a better option. So again, it's just experimenting. I'm trying to figure it out with you guys also. But that was kind of interesting to relay back to my weight that had come up after finally dropping. So that was kind of my thing. So there's another burp with the Red Bull. Now let's talk about dry January. I haven't been super vocal about dry January, but this has been freaking killing me. You guys, I drank more than ever in quarantine, like I think most people did. We'll just refer to, you know, last year's quarantine. There were times where I took 2 to 3 days off of drinking, but never really more than that. And I probably had 2 drinks a night almost every single night from March to the first of the year. I'm going to be 100% honest. You could say, oh, I had 1 drink, maybe a little drink. No, I had solid 2 drinks, some nights 3. And I love it. To be honest, with a lot of the stress I've dealt with the last year, I don't have that many vices. I'm super disciplined. It's nice to calm the brain down a little bit. I think I talked about last weekend, like I need some fuzz back. And I have proved to myself, obviously I'm not relying on it. I haven't had a drink in 3 weeks, but it's just getting kind of annoying, to be honest. I took a stevia soda with me last night on this walk. We're trying to get Lish, have Lish go into labor. And I'm walking, I have a koozie. I'm like, why is this not a beer or something? Come on, like, give me a break, give me something, please. So I'm over it. I'm super over dry January. Oh my gosh. At this time, if you ask me, I'd say I wouldn't do it next year, but who knows? By the time the holidays come around, I'll probably be disgusted at myself again and want to do it. And I think it is a great check-in. I do feel very, very sharp. My performance has been awesome. And so when I go back to more of a maintenance mode, I think I want to implement alcohol. It's like a prescription. It honestly feels like I need a prescription right now. So I've got the fever, and the only prescription is a couple drinks. All right. I need some peanut butter whiskey. So I want to start drinking, but I also don't want to destroy this progress because I've been working hard for it. And that's what I would say to you guys. Like, you know how hard you've worked to get to where you're at now, and especially toward the end of the month, or if you're not at your goal then, which I know a lot of people won't be because it's only 30 days. I'm going to give you tools to keep it moving. And I don't want you to have to go right back into this process because there's a lot of pain involved, you know, but it does mean that you can't just snap your fingers the day it's over and go back to whatever. You don't want to go have a cheat meal that has dessert and alcohol and heavy foods and fried foods and all that stuff. You have to come out of it with some strategy. So for me, knowing that I honestly haven't had a super hard time with the shred, with the exception of dry January, which, by the way, I know that wasn't criteria. I added that one on for me. And there's been a lot of days where I probably wouldn't have had alcohol because it wouldn't have fit in my macros. And I was just like too hungry to the point where I'm like, I just need some rice. You know, I need to actually eat food. So that's going to make me feel better. But there's also been a lot of days where I'm like, man, a glass of wine right now, come on. So when I am done with the official Dialed Health shred, my strategy is going to be to bring my calories, basically base calories from 2000 up to 2500 on workout days. On my non-workout day, I might leave it down at 2000. It's only one day a week though. But even if I went up to 2500, I would still be at maintenance just because of how active I am. And I wanna make sure that I track and include alcohol and don't go over that. Because as I talked about last week of how I burned 3000 calories on a ride and almost went over, and thank God I was tracking still. I know from past experiences of tracking my food and then just, you know, basically saying, okay, I'm just done tracking this day and I'm going to be a little bit more loose with my diet. That mentality is just too loose. You're going to put on too much weight. You're going to destroy too much progress too quickly. So I think what I have learned after doing this three times or so now, and each time it's a lot easier. You learn more tools. You don't have to do as much because there's not as, you know, far to go. Basically, my weight has slowly come down over the years every time I do it, but I am going to just stay tracking. I'm going to raise my calorie limit to maintenance, and I'm going to add the option of including alcohol. So that's my plan. I can help you set up your plan if you want to email me, but wait till maybe even next week's show where I actually will talk about the before and after photo strategy like I had mentioned last week. And then I'll also give you, there's going to be a blog post basically out just like there was for the start of the Dialed Health shred for the end of it. All the tools you need to kind of keep it moving and make sure you either keep up with progress or actually maintain and not gain all the weight back. We're now jumping into a quick business update. I figured if you made it this long in the episode, you're probably curious as to what's going on behind the scenes in my personal life. So let's actually start with the personal life stuff. Where are these babies at? You know what? I would not have announced it as early as I did, as far as, you know, any day now, if we weren't told basically that we're going to have them so early. We initially were told that, oh, expect them, you know, even around 36 weeks. It's very common for twins. So that came and went. And we're like, wow, okay, you're doing good, which is nice because truthfully, I was praying that they would get past 35 weeks, which is a lot of lung development stuff for the babies. We passed 36. I'm like, okay, they're getting up to weight. Ideally, they'd be over 5 pounds, which means they're more or less likely to spend any time in the NICU. And then week 37 comes by. And at that point, they had said, if you make it to 37 weeks, we're going to induce you. But she goes in. Of course, we've had like three different doctors because of just COVID schedules and stuff like that. And it's kind of been nice for second opinions, to be honest. But it's also, there's two things that's tough about it. For one, you get different opinions that are mixed. And for two, I'm not at these appointments. I have no, like, I don't really know what's going on. And I was so involved with Otto's birth. Thankfully, I'm happy I went through that process with him because I kind of get what she's talking about more. But I'm not able to ask these questions as they come up in an appointment. So I'm just kind of getting her feedback. I'll just be honest. She's not typically the one to ask all the questions. Usually I'm the one who's a little bit nosier or a little bit more direct or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, I've been getting the feedback. It's like, okay, 37 weeks, we're going to induce you. So that's when I had even posted on Instagram last weekend. It's like, yo, these babies got to be coming. So she goes to the doctor yesterday. And they're just doing great, chilling out. No, they're like, let's go another week. And I have been getting geared up for these things. So it's kind of nice because we do feel like we're in a place where we're ready. I feel more prepared business-wise. Not in the sense that I'm going to take time off, because to be 100% honest, I can't. But I feel like I'm in a place where with the support we have family-wise, I can keep things moving the way I need to be. And I would say right after the first of the year, I didn't feel that way. So that is good. We're in a good place for it. Basically, if she makes it to this Saturday, we're going to be induced. It's 38 weeks. She's got this little body. They are running out of room. Babies are looking good. But that was a very clear, quote unquote, because I wasn't there, order by the doctor. So if she doesn't go into labor naturally, we'll see. Even on my way to work today, she said she was having a lot more contractions today, a lot stronger. So who knows? I hope it happens before then. I'm just ready for these guys. I want to meet these little dudes. By the way, I'm going to tell you the names right now. I haven't announced it, I don't think. And of course we will on Instagram, but our firstborn son, his name is Otto Rocket. So that's first and middle name. And that's inspired by the TV show that literally shaped my entire childhood, Rocket Power. The character in that show is named Otto Rocket, which is, I just love it so much. It's like the coolest, weirdest thing I've ever done, was named my son after a cartoon character. But the next two names, and Lish really wants to look at them and decide. I said, the firstborn should just be named this, the secondborn should be named this, but she wants to get a good look at them. So we're gonna do it like that. And so, really, she's gonna pick. And so we have Remy Sunday, so R-E-M-I Sunday, like the day. And then we have Cruz Wilder. It'll be C-R-U-Z Wilder, and last name's Teal, obviously. So pretty stoked on those. It's funny, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have kids, just based on my demographic. And you know, choosing names like a wild thing. I don't know if you guys had this experience, but every time we chose names, we kind of just sat down one day and just really talked about it. And we would, you know, leading up to it, kind of spitball things here and there. But when it comes game time, you're like, all right, we got to lock this in. I remember you start throwing out stuff, you're looking up the list, you're writing all the stuff, and then there's all these names that sound good. And then there's that one that you're just like, boom, that's it. Like, that's got to be it. I don't know why, but that just sounds right. That happened with all three of the names, which I think is just really cool. It just clicked. And so I'm super pumped about that. I just want to meet these little dudes. I'm ready to adjust my lifestyle and just start this second journey as far as the kids go, because I know it's going to be a huge adjustment. And with things in place right now, I don't know. I get to that point where it's go time. I've been like this with business decisions as well. It's like, even if I plan on doing something far out, if I made the decision now, I'm just kind of like, screw it, let's do it now. Like, rip the Band-Aid off. So that's how I feel about it. Really grateful that they're looking super healthy, and just asking for prayers that Lish is healthy through the process, and that the two boys are, you know, happy and healthy coming out. We could bring them home and start raising these guys. And then really with Dialed Health, just so you guys know, we're making freaking moves. We are making moves. I wish you could look. I have a whiteboard not only in my studio but at home, and I'm starting to segment all of these different projects for the year, and I'm so stoked about it. So I have one project that's in very beginning stages that is going to be a real physical, personal challenge that I'm going to be doing later in the year, which I'm so pumped about. Like, there's a couple things coming together with it that I think are insane, but I really want to wait to announce it, because not in fear that someone else is going to do it, but more so because I want to make sure it's really locked in and done the right way. So that's kind of coming. I have some cool, not expansion, but I'll just say scaling ideas for the business in regards to getting more people on board. And there's a lot of new things I'm trying to figure out at the moment. So really just trying to find some wisdom right now. That is my big prayer in life. It's all about just wisdom, listening, and just being open to ideas and help and really being quick to make decisions. So yeah, there's some cool stuff coming up, and I just want to thank you guys for the support, because it's just insane to be in the position of, you know, completely online. And now when I'm facing these new challenges of growth and dealing with financials and building an app, there's another thing we're working on. There's all these stuff, there's all these things that are, it's just like another step in the ladder, you know. Every time you feel like you're in a place where you could just kind of that you wanted to get and it's going to be a little easier after that, you realize, oh my gosh, this next step's way harder. Way harder, way more risk, way more stress, way more whatever, but also way more rewarding and fun and exciting. And I don't know, I feel like I'm just in this place right now where I am really enjoying the process and the mystery of all this business growth. It's just so, it's really like this crazy puzzle that I'm trying to solve, it feels like. And it's fun along the way. I mean, it's kind of freaky, but I can't imagine doing anything else. I really can't. I would not trade this for anything. So thank you guys for supporting me in the process, and I hope you are just enjoying the product and everything that I'm putting out and doing, because man, I freaking love it. So let's keep it rolling. All right guys, let's hit that outro. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dialed Health Podcast. I really hope it adds some value to your week. If you have a specific question that you want me to answer in detail on the podcast, please email it to me at derek@dialedhealth.com. That's derek@dialedhealth.com. And I would, yeah, love to dive into the weeds with you guys on that one. It's a lot of fun to answer your specific questions, and it does help other members who maybe haven't taken the time to ask or kind of wondering the same thing a ton. So you're not just doing it for yourself, you're doing it for the entire Dialed fam. And as I mentioned before, please rate and review this podcast on whatever streaming platform you're on. 5-star review, just please say something positive. And I want to thank again, we had even more Google reviews this last week, and thank you just so much for helping me grow that, because as far as credibility goes, and now that I'm starting to work with more people and brands and making these connections, it really does add a lot of value and just positive perception in regards to value, because, you know, kind of what you can only see so much, and it has to be that front-facing stuff. So thank you guys again. Also, if you want to refer the podcast to anyone, that would be great. You could share it on your social media and tag @dialedhealth. I will repost it. And I guess lastly, it would be to let me know what podcast you guys think that I should be on. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, very curious about it. Please reach out to me and let me know. I've been looking at more cycling focused podcasts, but let me know which one would be a good fit. All right, guys, hope you have an incredible week. Start moving forward. I will see you next Wednesday.